Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? What? I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Pipes is writing down a lot of stuff. I'm just going to go from the gut.
I'm going to sell you on a guy that I already know you're not buying. All the deep dives.
Caillou, the kid that whined. I'm going to be frank. Sometimes I want a Clifford and Bear in the Big Blue House to go over and just knock him around.
I think they will win. They're back at home.
I'm going to go off here.
Hans, come in here. Let's poke you in the eye.
I literally just create madness. I put a packet of mild sauce.
The one Taco Bell packet was a little...
That was strange.
I don't know. Their secondary grades out is the worst. High scoring. Take the over. He who had injury, he who had.
King Derek the V.
Is it better to have two defensive coordinators or none?
Or none.
They have Tua's brother. It's easier than to pronounce. Yeah.
This song I really dislike.
Hans. Trevor's on fire right now. You got to be a trendsetter. 14 team, all heavy favorite. How dumb am I for doing that?
Yeah, you're dumb.
We are back on the drive. Derek Piper, Trevor Valise, Lante, on his way back from Arizona. We will see him tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yep.
He's going to be in tomorrow.
Assuming no flight issues.
No flight issues. I'm sure you want to rush back to talk about his still undefeated Arizona Cardinals. And really, I know that listeners out there sometimes roll their eyes like, really, the Arizona Cardinals? Like, of our rooting interest here on the show, it's really the only team we're talking about.
Yeah, both Cardinals. Cardinals in football and baseball.
I apologize for that.
That's pretty much it is Cardinals.
We are going to talk Bears later this hour because we need to hash some things out. Not that we're going to say anything that hasn't been said throughout the day by various other media outlets and personalities. And
it's therapeutic to ourselves, though.
That's true. Those that just know what good football looks like and then knows, I don't really even know what the heck I saw. It was just
that wasn't
epically
football.
Horrible.
I don't know what that was. It wasn't football, though. I can assure you of that.
For those who enjoy football, and there are a lot of you out here in this area, and I tweeted it yesterday, and it was just a depressing,
we didn't see a touchdown
empty
this
feeling.
Weekend.
Like
Illinois didn't score a touchdown, and the Bears didn't score a touchdown. We didn't see a touchdown this weekend, cumulatively.
Like, I'm going to watch Illinois on Saturday and watch the Bears on Sundays. I hate to say it. Like, a lot of time, too often, it's a sad existence.
Yep.
It stinks.
It brings a lot of pain right now.
It does.
Especially when it's that putrid, you know? Just like, it's not even like, well, that was 42-39, you know, tough one or something. Like, I don't even know what I'm watching on one side of the ball right now with both. But,
and not that it would make me feel better, but the fact that they're like mirror images of each other.
Yep.
Not that Illinois gave up 9 sacks and it wasn't that terrible, but that both were so offensively inept and could not move the ball and all of this. It's like, why can't one of you just stink it? All right, Illinois, score 9 points. Then the Bears put up 35 but give up 50. Like, at least give me some variety. Don't make me watch the same stuff.
It's so sad that you're begging for different problems with your football teams, but I totally get it. At least give me a variety of issues to complain about.
Yeah. We are going to talk some St. Louis Cardinals because they are still on an epic heater. But just to tie the bow around the Illinois football discussion, in case you missed it, in case you were living under a rock or enjoying some time outside this week, and they lost 13-9 on the road at West Lafayette. Brett Bielema doesn't go for it on 4th and 2, relatively deep into Purdue's territory. Could have kicked a field goal. Mathematically, would it make sense to do so? The fact that James McCourt had already made a 50-plus yard field goal, and it was just deja vu all over again. Illinois blowing a fourth quarter lead, and what could have been? What could have been? I know that Brett was asked about.
Let's hear his explanation.
Yeah, let's hear it, and we'll react to it.
So we had just missed from the 36. The ball was really in the same position. It was getting +2, I think, where it was. We were going the opposite direction as rolling around. What I didn't want to do, we were up by 3, a little bit different than the scenario last week. And it was a 4th and 2. It wasn't a 4th and 1. So we felt we were going to have to throw the ball to make that happen. We had gone for a 3rd and 4 the series before, really kind of almost the same spot in the field and didn't convert. So I wasn't going to go 4th and 2. If we didn't convert, turn the ball over and give it to them 35 with huge momentum down by 3. It just, I think everybody that talks about going for it, right, they're thinking about, you know, they're getting it, right? They don't think about what happens if you don't get it. I'm trying to win a game, right, not lose a game.
But see, that's the thing that is making a lot of fans really angry is because it seems like that move, And as Jay explained, and there's more reasons to back what he did against Maryland, but in that one, you are definitely coaching not to lose rather than coach to win. And we just saw in the NFL, not saying you don't have Lamar Jackson, and I did advocate, so put the ball in Isaiah Williams' hands in the Wildcat and max protect on one side, just sprint him out, let him go up the middle if the hole is there or out to the side if it's open. But you're not having that aggressiveness and only getting out like 27 yards on a punt, like net. That's coaching not to lose, and it's being overly conservative, and you're just coaching yourself into a loss.
I have several reactions to the things he said there. First of which, do you remember when it was Illinois-Maryland, Cowan hit that shot at the end to win the game, and Underwood called that timeout in between the free throws, and it made no sense?
Yes.
And it clearly was just a mistake, and that's fine. Like, I'm not saying I still hate Underwood for it or something, but the thing that annoyed me more than the mistake or anything about it was there was this weird, like, convoluted 3.5-minute explanation from him on, like, he was trying to purposefully take a dead ball technical or something. It made no sense, right? And the reaction coming away from that was just like, I just wish he'd have said, like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that, you know? This reminded me of that just in the sense of, like, essentially he's saying he didn't trust McCourt from that distance because he missed from that exact distance earlier in the game, despite omitting the fact that he made two longer field goals than that earlier in the game. I mean, this is a guy you've given a nickname, okay? He's given him a nickname on his team, the Lads. Like that's how much he says, you know, he's so complimentary of him. I cannot believe that, honestly, in that moment, the reason why he didn't go for it was he was afraid that his kicker, who's nailed long field goals, would miss this field goal. Like, to me, that part of it just is like almost like a throwaway. That makes no sense to me. I don't know why you wouldn't trot him out there for fear that he misses. Like, I've never heard of a football coach saying, we purposely didn't kick a 36-yard field goal or whatever because the guy missed from 35 last week or something. I've just never heard of that being a reasonable explanation to not kick a field goal.
Yeah, it's totally different than Lante's Cardinals kicking it from 68 yards before halftime and they catch it and return it for a touchdown. There wasn't the potential of, oh, well, number one, this is just such a long shot of a makeable kick.
Right.
And number two, it could really be a backbreaker where they're going to take it back to the house. Like,
right.
If he misses it, he misses it, and now they still got to go 70 yards, 65 yards to score a touchdown.
So that facet of it made no sense to me. To me, I would either be kicking it or going for it. The explanation for not kicking it made absolutely no sense to me. And then really, the explanation for not going for it, if that is genuinely how he was thinking, because my point overall here is I think he just goofed up, and he's trying to come up with reasons as to why he goofed up, and I'd just rather him say that. Maybe, I mean, he doubles down to the point where he says, I do that 100 times out of 100, and I just don't get that. And that was why I was referencing the Underwood thing. It's like, we don't need to quadruple down on the dumb thing. We could also just say, maybe next time we look at that and don't do it that way again, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. And you're talking about, you know, third and four. I just don't understand the logic behind it. He references that McCourt missed a kick earlier, and that's why he doesn't take the kick there, which seems like a weird, scared way of playing football that I don't get. And you don't hear people talk about. And then he says the same thing where we had a third and four earlier in the game that was unsuccessful. So I'm thinking of that fourth and two similarly, and I'm just thinking we shouldn't go for it.
Which is two less yards to get.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, you're not going for it in that context of the game situation because earlier a third and four didn't work. And again, if that is the truth, if that is genuinely what he's thinking in that moment, then I'm a lot more worried. If he is that unconfident, that's not a phrase, that you can't get 2 yards with essentially the game on the line, then I'm extremely concerned. Because if he genuinely believed that Brandon Peters could not complete a 2-yard pass or that you even had to throw it to begin with on that play, then I don't know what to tell him.
And it's against Purdue. You're not facing Wisconsin's defense. You're not facing Ohio State's defense. Ohio State's defense isn't very good. But you know what I'm saying? Like, Purdue's defense is not some kind of unit that's going to scare you. I know that they were loading up the trenches and everything. And if you tried it with Josh McCray, wasn't in the game, that's one thing to have a discussion about as well. But I don't understand how, if you fully believe on the Purdue side that they're going to run the football, because what have they done? They've been predictable the entire game. Run, run. Okay, if we have to pass, we will. What about if you're not going to try it up the middle with 8 guys in that vicinity? How about sneak a tight end out? And let Brandon Peters, for as much as you don't trust that guy, go that route in terms of being aggressive. And at the very at the very core of it all, I think it's just so much more acceptable to say, look, we had a lead on the road against Purdue. It just happened to us the last week. And even if you don't want to factor in that part of it, let's go win the dang game instead of let's try to just like sit back and, okay, we'll just see what happens. Maybe Purdue will mess up and you end up shooting yourself in the foot. It's just and it's such the opposite of what, again, I said it in the first hour, like of what I thought I believed about Brett Bielema and what he was going to bring to Illinois, just kind of the smash mouth, tough, really confident. Like, and then he has the bravado to say, I do it 100 times. Like, don't question me on it. Why not be aggressive and go for that? In year one, what do you have to lose?
Right. And I just, lots of people are texting in, that was dumb, it was stupid. To Jay's point as well, like, what's the max good out of that? The maximum good is a 33-yard punt. Like, on the scale of what could poorly happen on that play to positively happen, the best possible thing is that you down them 20 yards further down the field than where you already were. So, to your point, it's not like our decisions here were a 60-yard field goal or a punt or fourth and seven or a punt. Like, I just don't understand how the risk outweighed the reward of the punt to the degree that he explained it as having had.
No, it doesn't make sense, and it's frustrating. And I think that overall, in general, the offensive performance outside of McCray was frustrating and very underwhelming. And we're not spending as much time talking about that because you were still in a position to win the game. And I understand that if you don't have that confidence in your quarterback or your receivers, which is a decimated position, you didn't have much talent there anyway, like, trying to be something you're not, like making Peters throw more, you know, more shots on the field, whatever, and you're turning the ball over. Obviously, you're taking away from what your defense was doing, but it was hard to watch. Like, first and 10, stuff, second and 12, we're still going to run it. Third and 8, Brandon Peters rolls out, holds on to the ball way too long, throws it out of bounds. Then you punt. Like, watching that over and over again, it's not good.
It's just deflating. Like, if I'm the other team, I'm feeling supremely confident anytime we back them into a passing situation, period. Because again, like we talked about in the first hour, like that the third and fourth down passes literally landed like next to the cheerleader's feet out of bounds.
Yep.
And there was earlier in the game, it was like third and 10, and it was like a 6-yard out route. And he completed it, but it just wasn't even close down to the sticks. And that's the stuff where I'm just like, man, like you lose me at that point. And again, I'm not just trying to dog on Brandon for an hour here, but like he loses me when it's a rollout fade and he just throws it 10 yards out of bounds, or he needs to get to the 35 and he holds the ball way too long and throws it to the 29. Like that's the stuff where it's just like, I feel like he's seeing ghosts out there or something because it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there was the one to Luke Ford. I don't remember what down it was. It might have been third down where it was one-on-one. And it seemed like the DB hadn't even fully turned around. And if you just gave him a chance to go up and make a play,
yeah,
the throw that you had, like, not that you can't try to be in the vicinity and you're rolling, you're inaccurate, but it three times in a row, throwing it out of contention to be caught by anybody just says that you're scared.
Yep.
In my opinion. It just says that you're scared to make a mistake.
Right. And that's what's more frustrating to me is the scared to make a mistake by Brett Bielema. It's the scared to make a mistake by Brandon. Like, look, guys, if we're going to go 1-11, let's go down swinging. You know what I mean? Not that I think they're going to go 1-11, but let's not go down 1-11 gun shy. At the very least, let's go down 1-11 swinging.
I know. And I think that in general, the play calling has been pretty scared too. But again, to the credit a little bit, like establishing the run, it definitely worked.
Yep.
Giving Josh McCray that heavy workload, that definitely worked. But I've been saying creativity week after week here. And unfortunately, I just had to put my head down and shake it when you finally saw the Philly special, like the reverse pass.
Right.
Isaiah Brandon Peters is wide open, and then he throws a duck that goes out of bounds or goes through his fingertips because it wasn't really catchable at all. And it's like, oh, well, maybe that's why you're not doing that play.
Right. And so there is a bit of a, like, we could sit here and say the chicken or the egg, right, with like the play calling versus the person who's tasked with making that play. I don't know how much of it is Peterson up there in the box going, good God, Brandon, it can't even complete a pass. Like, here's what we're going to do because I just don't have any faith in him versus Brandon getting a play that maybe he doesn't like or something, and then the pressure's on him. And so, you know, I don't know how much of it is on, I guess, player versus coach specifically, but my takeaway from that overall is I don't even care how we're going to parcel up the blame from that one. I just don't like what I saw in that fourth quarter at all. And I know that's Captain Obvious, but I just did not like the way that went down. Taking the loss out of it, I just did not like the way that played out at all.
No, definitely not. And I do want to circle back one more time, as we are beating a dead horse. I get it. But you said it on Friday. It had to be the way a lot of people were feeling and thinking. Like, if Brandon didn't show up in that game, in a winnable game, which it played out to have, it was there for the taking. If Brandon was not good enough, and it was very clear, you were done with him, you said. Yep. You didn't want to see him anymore. I know a lot of people are feeling that, so that's where I'm a little confused. And I know Jay was getting to the point of, well, maybe Brett's playing those media games again as far as what his plans are actually going to be, but fans don't want to go to Memorial Stadium this week against Charlotte and see Brandon Peters do the same stuff that he's done the last 2 weeks.
Nope. I'm out. Like I said last week, I meant it. I'm out. I mean, there's no... He's had a bumpy road. I'll give it to him. You know, he had COVID last year, or at least he was around someone who had COVID. He's had injuries. He started this year injured. And, you know, to a certain degree, maybe I understood Brett's point last week of let's calm down a little bit on skewering him for Maryland, because it was really his first full week in this system on a game week prep ever. But what is it this week? He had a full week. He had all of his wide receiver weapons, as poor as they might be, and I know the offensive line hasn't helped either. I just feel like even mediocrity looks better than what we're seeing from the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think that one of the comebacks or one answer that a lot of people have is it doesn't really matter. Like, Brandon and Art are essentially the same in terms of ceiling and their flaws and the way the game's going to be called. I mean, the one thing you could say at this point, especially after losing 4 in a row and you're sitting there at 1-4, is like, not that you're going to completely give up on the season and play for the future, although we've talked here the last couple of weeks in particular of not to just say that, you know, certain guys on defense, younger players are getting in because they're thinking about year two, year three. They might be the better option, but you could at least sell yourself on let's play Art for the final 7 games, see what we have. And even if we're already dead set in our minds of the next quarterback's coming from the portal.
Yep.
This offseason, you might as well see if Art can progress at all.
Yeah, like, take stock.
Brandon's not going to be here, and that's not necessarily a bad thing either.
I just feel like maybe I'm going crazy a little bit, because I feel like we've given him 8 chances, and each chance the reaction from certain people, and I get why the reaction from your head coach can't be, well, I'm out on him forever, but it seems like chance after chance the reaction is, let's give him a chance. And it's just like, fool me once, fool me twice. We're on like fool me 7 here. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Like I've seen enough. Okay. I've seen it. It's not working. It's not happening. And again, not to say that like Art's going to come out and set the world on fire, but I think there's something to be said for attitude and charisma and whatnot. And by all reports, Art is the stud who knows he's the stud, who wants to be the starting quarterback. And Brandon mopes off like, he's a sad little boy who just got his candy stolen from him whenever he does something bad. And I hate that.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting real personal with it, and I'm sorry for that. But I get
what you're saying.
He doesn't
still
have
gotta
the
show
demeanor.
He's a stud. Like,
yeah.
But I knew what you were saying.
It's the Jay Cutler thing, right? Where, like, fair or not, when he'd throw 3 picks and then go mope over on the sideline and look like he just wanted to go home, it just doesn't look good. And maybe I'd do the same thing in that scenario, because clearly, it's not going well for anyone on that offense except McCray right now. So,
yep.
I don't know.
We can move on.
I've had enough of it, and it. I mean, you're going to be favored, but Charlotte's 3-1. You're 1-4.
Yep.
You should win this game, but if you don't, it is a disaster.
Did I see it correctly? I was on ESPN, and it said Illinois was a 10.5-point favorite. Is that correct?
Is that okay? That sounds. I mean, that might. Okay. I don't want to touch that line.
No, I'm not asking.
But yeah. By the way, someone's calling, and I'm sorry, but since it's just Derek and I, we have no one to pick up the phone.
Yeah, 10 and a half looks about right. 11 a.m. on BTN.
Okay, well, here we go.
Here we go is right.
Come to Pia's. Let's redirect
that's
that
right,
to Friday
yeah.
to Friday energy.
Come to Pia's this Friday. Hang out with us. We'll get through it together. We'll talk a little bit of hoops.
It's a media day, right? Friday?
Illinois basketball media day is Friday. So I'll be coming, I think it's... early afternoon, so coming straight from that. Hopefully some good, maybe if we can play some sound bites, we will. Otherwise, we'll
talk some hoops. Bring everybody with if, you know,
if
they're down.
Come on, guys.
Open invite to anyone.
Right.
Head over to Pius.
All right. Fair enough. Well, before we take a break, I did want to cheer you up a little bit and talk some St. Louis Cardinals, who are, I can't even say that with a straight face. They've won 16 in a row, including four at Wrigley for another sweep. The magic number is one, I believe, in terms of clinching that final wild card spot. That is a good thing for the Cardinals in terms of setting their rotation. It's Waino against Woodruff as it is set right now for tomorrow against Milwaukee. Of course, the Reds could lose, although they won today. So you'd still be playing it out like you normally would. But it would be nice to throw Waino early in the week and have him ready for that one-game wild card against inevitably Max Scherzer.
Their magic number is one.
I think it's one.
Can we just zoom out and talk about how insane that is from like 3 weeks ago? Because 3 weeks ago, their playoff odds were closer to one, and now their magic number is one. It's just insane.
They're 20-6 in September.
That's just, it's crazy what they've done. I don't even know how to properly wrap my head around it because there was like I think it was a doubleheader, correct me if I'm wrong, against the Reds. Like 3 weeks ago, and I think the Reds either took one or both. And that sort of felt like, okay, like if you have any chance of getting back in this thing, you need to do something here. And they didn't. And it just felt like at that point, it would take nothing short of a minor miracle just to make it. And the fact that we're talking about them clinching it with a week to go, it's just crazy.
And you even had yesterday where they're down 2-1 in the eighth and Bader hits a big home run to tie it. And this is a guy that in September is hitting 360. Harrison Bader hitting 360 in a month. Like, that is really impressive with what he's bringing defensively, obviously, what he can do on the base path. You've got some guys in that lineup that are hot. Like, Goldie since the All-Star break has been really darn good. He in September has hit 340. O'Neill's hit bombs. He's hitting 310 in September with 11 home runs. Nolan's starting to... Lon did bring it up, like the average. It's easy, like, to go baseball card and go, like, all right, he's not really bringing it, but he does have the power. They're a fun team to watch right now. I know not for your.
I mean,
your perspective.
I was tuning in this weekend because I was just curious to see if the Cubs would play any type of spoiler when the streak would end. If it did, they were down in the eighth inning. It felt like three of the four games. Maybe it was two of the four, but I don't know. I don't know what kind of devil magic they've got cooked up over there right now, but this is like all-time devil magic
here. There we go. That's what I wanted to get at. Before we took a break, I wanted to ask you, you've mentioned that multiple times, like on the scale reading of 0 to 10 in terms of devil magic, is it an 11 or
this
what?
This is like a 9.5 at least. I don't want to go so hyperbolic and call it a 10, but I mean 16-0 to make the postseason in a lot of those games where it looked like they could have easily lost. I don't know what's going on, but
I don't really know either.
Man, weird play in the ninth inning yesterday about with the infield fly rule? That was kind of weird. The umps totally screwed that up. Essentially,
I saw the explanation today on Twitter, and it still didn't make sense. Schilt got run from the game.
He
I understand why he was very upset.
Because essentially, after the infield fly was called, it's like the runner's onus to decide to move on. And so the Cubs runners did, I don't know why, inexplicably. And so it should have been a double play to end the game, but the umpires were essentially arguing that because it was the infield fly rule, everything else is, like, negated, essentially. And then somehow they moved the runners up a base, too. So they went from first and second to second and third. So even as a Cubs fan, I was sitting there going, I don't know what is going on right now, but it seems like the Cardinals just got screwed.
I was like, this is how the streak's going to end. Not that the season would be over or anything, but Arenado just... Turf monster.
Yeah.
It looked like he could have blown out his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And then part of the explanation was like, well, we called infield fly, but not all the umpires knew it was infield fly. So the first base guy was signaling there someone was out on the force out, but he really wasn't. So then the runners thought he was, the runner thought he was out. So then he left the base, then he tagged him. So then he would have actually been out.
So the argument was that the Cubs players were fooled by the umpire who didn't know what was going on.
Yes.
And so that it wasn't the Cubs players' fault for moving up.
Yeah.
Interesting. Whatever. That was the last home game for the Cubs, and fine. I on the opposite end of the spectrum of 16-0, I've never been more reignited into a baseball season quicker. I'm just like, can we just get this week over with? Can Max Scherzer throw a no-hitter in the wild card and we can all just go home?
Yeah. Because you just really want to move on to bear season because it's really delivering. Yeah.
It is insane, though. I mean, I'm just, as an unbiased third party, it's insane that they've won 16 in a row.
Certainly is.
What's the, like I remember, you know, Moneyball, it was 20, was the AL record that the A's beat. What's the NL record? I mean, they've got to be close to it.
That's a good question. I have to effort that. I was looking at some stuff that Kevin Wheeler, our friend, was tweeting out from KMOX that said there have been 31 teams to have a winning streak of 16-plus since 1880, 12 in the last 100 years, I think 5 in the last 50. And someone asked him who what the longest in the last 50 years was. He said it was the Cleveland Indians in 2017. They won 22 straight.
So they're six away from tying the all-time record, basically.
Yeah. And you brought up Moneyball would be, if it was, right. I think it was 20, right?
Yeah, that was 20. I think it was 21 to break the streak of 20, I think, on that walk-off home run. So it's crazy. I don't know if, do the Brewers lie down now that they've clinched? I doubt it. I don't think they're going to punt a whole week, but.
Do they have any chance at home field anymore?
I don't think so. I think the Giants and Dodgers are both well ahead of them in terms of win percentage, maybe. At least not to the point where I think they'd want
the Giants are 8 wins up on them.
Okay, so there's no way. So I don't know what the Brewers' game plan is this week, but could you imagine if the Cardinals entered the postseason on a 26-game win streak? I mean, that would be insane.
That would be nuts. I would almost feel, I hesitate to say this because I did say it about Illinois basketball, and that wasn't good. Peaking too early, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
A little bit different, though, because Illinois was in the point of, like, the one seed. The Cardinals are just trying to get in. Like,
Right. There's only one spot for them to get.
They had to get insanely hot.
And they're getting it by getting insanely hot. So, yeah, no, I get what you're saying, though. I definitely get it. Boy, if you're the Dodgers and you put together, just hypothetically, like an 105-win season, and you get the wild card game, and you face a team that's won more games in a row than anyone in history, and you lose. I mean, talk about a crappy way to end a season. Yikes.
Sounds great to me. Sounds great to me. We'll see how it plays out. The Cardinals have the Brewers starting tomorrow, a series, and then the Cubs and Cardinals finish it up this weekend. We got some Bears to talk about because, well, yeah, we need to. Just a little bit. Justin Fields made his first start in the NFL. Matt Nagy did Matt Nagy things at epic proportions. And maybe a whip around the NFL, what else went down, because we got to have some kind of a positive note in here.
Yeah, we have to end on something other than doom and gloom.
Maybe a Cowboys-Eagles same-game parlay.
Ooh, all right. I'm in on that.
Let's do that. A little bit to do. Talk some more football when we come back. This is The Drive.
Carpet Weavers is flooring their customers. They work with the biggest brands to bring you the best selections and prices on hardwood, luxury tile, carpet, and more. Stop in at 616 West Market View Drive in Champaign and let one of their sales associates help you find the perfect flooring for your lifestyle. Their 100% satisfaction guarantee allows you to be confident in your purchase. Carpet Weavers has been flooring people with beautiful carpet and flooring since 1988. In fact, they're nationally ranked as one of the top 25 specialty flooring stores in the country. Find out more online at carpetweaversflooring.com.
Hi, I'm Habib, inviting you to buy your tickets for John Maxwell's Live to Lead. It's virtual this year and tickets are only $79. You get immediate access to a lot of bonus material. Then on Friday, October 8th, you watch live. But in case you're busy that morning, you have 3 days to watch. I've hosted it for many years and it's always awesome and inspiring. Go to HabibHabib.com and buy your tickets today. If you're not willing to learn, no one can help you. If you're determined to learn, no one can stop.
The Cardinals host the Cubs the weekend of October 1st through the 3rd. And there's great giveaways all weekend long. On Saturday, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older will take home a Paul Goldschmidt bobblehead courtesy of Purina. This unique bobblehead includes a photo frame and Goldie's lovable pup connected to the base. That's Saturday, October 2nd, the Goldschmidt bobblehead. For tickets or more information, visit cardinals.com/promotions.
Fighting Illini football is right around the corner. Get down to the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit, to gear up for your return to Memorial Stadium this fall. With their great selection of football designs and tailgate necessities, Game Day Spirit is the one-stop shop for Illinois football fans. Visit one of their convenient locations at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town, Neal and Kirby in Champaign, or online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
If you're familiar with the world's fastest mower, then you already know about Dixie Chopper at Dedicated Diesel in Urbana, your local dealer for Rhino AG 3-point hitch and bat wing mowers. See the great end-of-season pricing on the Dixie Chopper and check out the full line of Lucas Oil products. Dedicated Diesel is the area's original liquid tube dealer with great season-ending deals on the world's fastest mower, the Dixie Chopper. For more details, visit Dedicated Diesel at 1306 Triumph Drive in Urbana.
You have money laying all around your house. You just don't know it. And no, I don't mean selling your great-grandma's good china. I mean all the old metal items you don't want to use or get rid of. Don't pay someone to haul it away. Bring it into Max Twin City Recycling and get paid to have it taken off your hands. They love new customers and are more than willing to walk you through their process step by step. Come check them out at 2808 North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
Starting it over is what we do.
When your car breaks down, you realize just how much you need it. And when it breaks down, Beaumont Alignment Plus steps up. For routine maintenance like brakes, oil changes, tune-ups, batteries, and tires, you can count on Beaumont Alignment Plus. Bigger issues, including alignment, suspension work, starters, alternators, transmission, require specialists. So get to know Beaumont Alignment Plus for your vehicle repairs. With locations on Bloomington Road and Denison Drive in Champaign, you're never far from the help you need. It's good to know the quality service is still affordable at Beaumont Alignment Plus.
Do you want to do something nice for your family? How about the gift of time and less work? Introducing the Wash and Dry Club from Country Squire Cleaners. Every week, Country Squire will come to your home in Champaign, Urbana, Savoy, and Mahomet and deliver it back to your home 3 days later. Laundry done, $25 a week for 25 pounds. The Wash and Dry Club, Country Squire Cleaners, Round Barn in Champaign. Call 356-9422 for complete details. 356-9422. Call today.
It takes a team effort to ensure a successful future. That's why Loman Ray Insurance Group and Grinnell Mutual are celebrating the accomplishments of our student athletes across every sport. We recognize the dedication it takes to work and play hard. Your display of teamwork makes it easy to trust in tomorrow. Find one of 13 convenient Loman Ray locations, your local Grinnell Mutual agency, by visiting www.lomanray.com/locations. Trust in Tomorrow is a registered trademark of Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company.
It's Lante
and Derek Piper.
Join us live every Friday before home football games this season at Pia's Sports Bar and Grill.
We'll be giving away prizes, Illini football tickets, and more.
Come kick back, listen to our show, and grab a Slugger Burger.
It's College Game Day Live with Tay and Piper.
Every Friday before home football games at Pia's.
Han's going to be there?
Of course I'll be there.
Ah, great.
On ESPN Radio, 93.5.
Did you know that the largest security monitoring company in our area has been sold? You will if you try to give them a call.
All of our representatives are currently busy.
When it comes to your home security and peace of mind, the last thing anyone wants to hear is
the estimated hold time is 96 minutes.
Don't be left on hold. Trust the local and family-owned company who have been doing this for almost 50 years. Trust Barcom. Give them a call at 217-679-2387. They'll actually
Barcom Security.
Answer the phone. Barcom Security. Have a secure day.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen. There in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve. Go to afreserve.com for more information.
Hey, Illini fans, it's your girl, Chinee Ogumike. Catch Lante and Derek Piper weekdays from 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Oh, you're about to go blasphemous.
That is blasphemous. How dare you say such a thing? That is insanity.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
Field in trouble. Down he goes again. The Browns have 9 sacks.
The Chicago Bears should fire Matt Nagy today. Matt Nagy should not have an office. He should be fired. Yesterday's game plan was the worst one I've ever seen in my life, and it was an embarrassment.
I mean, what the hell is this? I really don't understand it.
That is negligent. That is dumb. That is stupid.
That was a disaster, like a 0 out of 100 disaster.
There's no defense.
Are you out of your mind? This is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
We've been broken for 2 damn long.
There is no way to sugarcoat this. Ladies and gentlemen, we have problems.
Come on. Like, that's not even fair. And the kid's trying, but give me a break. You're getting paid for that.
I want him sent to jail.
This was the biggest Bears game in 2 years, and it was the ugliest Bears game in 102 years.
Do you want to watch the same horror film twice? Don't tell me he's not ready. It's your freaking job to get him ready.
Oh, the joys of being a football fan around here. Courtesy to everyone in the nation.
All media everywhere.
All media. For their thoughts on the Chicago Bears, Justin Fields, most notably Matt Nagy and his incompetence. But let's not bury Ryan Pace behind all this. Like, the guy making the decisions, the guy signing a 40-year-old left tackle.
Who was fishing 2 weeks ago.
Who was fishing. I forgot, Jason Peters.
Yep.
Because he drafted a second-round left tackle in Tevin Jenkins, who had pre-existing back issues, so he's not available. That was as demoralizing as just wrong. Like, I've been disappointed watching the Bears. It was just so wrong. Like, the defense actually showed up. They got after Baker Mayfield. I was excited. I was pumped up.
Quinn suddenly sacking people after doing nothing for 2 years.
They were in the game, and I've built up Justin Fields in my head because he's a really talented quarterback. And you've had to be thinking this whole time, even though Dalton was your starter, even though you've got some flaws, when Fields gets in there, this is how we're going to use him. This is how we're going to play to his strength. Here's our game plan. I didn't like the fact through training camp that he didn't get any first-team reps at all.
Yep.
That was one thing. So in terms of talking about him, how ready is he? Like, that should play into your preparation. You got to think about this moment, even though whether it was going to be Dalton getting hurt, Dalton not playing well enough, this is going to happen. And then just, the incompetence of calling the way you called certain plays. I heard a stat that of the 20 passes, there was like 15 of them where he didn't have any extra help and protection. It was just your 5 up front. No running back staying in the block. No tight end staying in the block.
And they were dropbacks, too. It wasn't like a rollout or something.
It was awful. It was brutal. And to put your prized possession of that draft out there, your quarterback of the future, and just getting hit and sacked 9 times and just getting absolute. How does that guy have any confidence?
I don't know what I expected, but it was like 100-fold worse.
I didn't expect to win.
No, but I expected to and they were talking about this on what's the NFL Network morning show? It's pretty good. Good morning football. And I thought it was a good point. They basically were saying that when they came in this morning to meet about like what they wanted to talk about and stuff, they said, let's talk about Justin Fields, like, you know, what he did right, what he did wrong. And they said they literally couldn't put together tape to say, like, that out route was too far thrown. He needs to throw that more towards Robinson's, you know, like, they couldn't even dissect what he did because, essentially, like, he didn't even have the opportunity to be disappointing or good.
Right.
Like, they literally couldn't. What's the takeaway on Justin Fields from that game? I have none. I can't go, man, if only he did X, Y, and Z, or boy, there was a flash here, but not there. I can think of one pass to Allen Robinson. That's it. I have no other critiques, comments, concerns, analysis on Justin Fields as a quarterback.
There was one other rollout where Cole Kmet was open in the flat, which was going to be like a 2 or 3 yard gain. he doesn't throw it. He ends up falling down and gets sacked. And there have been some times, whether it be in preseason or we saw it against the Bengals, where it looks like he's processing a little bit longer than maybe you would want. Then Andy Dalton is going to, by design, he's trying to get the ball out as quick as possible. Other than that, you just had no chance. You just had absolutely no chance.
Like, what was that? They've had Justin Fields in the building for 152 days, someone tweeted. How do you not put together something in that length of time, knowing that this was coming, right? Like, it wasn't like, and now look, to be fair, I guess maybe it came sooner than they thought because Dalton got hurt. But how do you not have anything drawn up to what would suit Justin Fields? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand, and I'm sad, Derek, and I don't understand.
I was very sad. I was really bummed out. Had been drinking some Busch Light. Had to break out a little whiskey after that, like in the third quarter. Like, this is just...
Again, I get that Cleveland has a great defense, right? There's another point where you can throw, like, Garrett and Clowney will kill you anyways. But, like, not like that.
No.
That was the second worst offensive output in NFL history. Okay? Listen to what I just said. That was the second worst offensive output in NFL history, numbers-wise. Jeez. They had one net yard, if you count the sacks, the entire game. One net offensive yard passing, because Montgomery had a few runs that were nice. Again, you walk away from that, and I don't know what I was expecting, but I was at least expecting to have something to analyze. Right. I don't even know what the hell I just watched. Like, I walk away from that, and I'm like, I can't make anything of this. I can't say, oh, man, you know, that third down throw. There's nothing. He literally got killed. Well, not literally, but he's going to be if they don't get him help.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's malpractice from the top down. I don't understand the game plan from Nagy. I don't understand, to your point, the things that they've built around him, specifically that offensive line. You draft a guy who it turns out has degenerative back problems, and then you're surprised that he's hurt. None of it makes sense. It's all extremely frustrating. It's all extremely angering. I try not to be too hyperbolic, but I agree that if I were in charge, Matt Nagy would not have an office today, and I'm dead serious. I think he should have been fired this morning.
100%. He should have been fired after last year. And that's what made me frustrated when the Bears, thanks to Lante's Cardinals, sneak into the postseason. Not that that was going to push it over, but you expand the postseason, they go to New Orleans, you know you're going to get beat, you do. But I thought, and I was genuinely curious, you've had Mitch Trubisky, who is severely limited as a quarterback and what he's going to be, and he's been proven to be just terrible. And is some of that because of Matt Nagy? Like, you could watch that football game or just having watched the Bears and kind of answer some of that in your head. Like, well, maybe some of it, but I genuinely believe, like, Mitch Trubisky does not have the toughness about him, the ability to break down defenses, and all of that. Like,
it does make you think, though,
it does
right?
make you think a little bit, which is just awful because Mitch is
a horrible quarterback. Yeah, right.
He is a bad quarterback. But the fact that you're going to watch that and you start to wonder, like, well, maybe I don't know. Matt Nagy's terrible. And I thought that you were sold on this, like, offensive genius. Like, forget genius. Like, just even know how to call an offense, how to scheme an offense. And it does start at the top with Ryan Pace. One, keeping him around. Number two, the way that he has constructed this offense, where you're going to get a very good quarterback in the draft, but not have an O-line to protect him. You're going to lose both your starting tackles, and your answer is a left tackle who's a rookie who has back problems, and then when that doesn't work, a 40-year-old left tackle.
And the rest stink, too. I mean, Ifedi's false starting every other play, and he's missing blocks. I don't know. It's from the top down that it's a problem. And you mentioned his play calling and how he's an offensive genius. Someone said on Twitter, put together his 28 games as the Bears play caller. So not the ones where Bill Lazor was the play caller, not some of the ones early in his tenure where he had a different offensive coordinator calling plays. When Matt Nagy has been in charge of your offense, it is ranked 31st in points per game and 32nd in yards per play. That's it. Dead last, basically, in every offensive category that matters.
And then they just rub it in your face, too. Like, you listen to the press conference today and think that something's going to be different. Like, he's going to show up at the podium and say, hey, guys, I had to give up play calling last year. Somehow between last year and this year, I got it back. But I'm going to give it back to Bill Lazor. We could all be like, all right, at least we'll see something different against the Lions. No, he didn't say that at all. He said something like, everything's on the table. And
which is even worse to say that now.
Yeah.
Now he's talking about, well, maybe Foles starts.
Exactly. That's what I was going to hit at next.
What are we doing here?
Maybe Dalton, maybe Fields, or Foles. Could be anybody against the Lions.
I mean, he couldn't have said anything worse. He basically says, we're going to try anything and everything. Maybe Nick Foles starts. Wait, what? I don't. He's got this basement that's full of play-calling wallpaper where his playbook is on the walls. It's just like, I don't understand.
The whole BU.
Yeah, right.
Be somebody else. Like,
And he always says these things like he's dumbfounded too, you know. Really bad. We gotta think about things. We gotta look at ourselves in the mirror. It's you, dude.
Yeah.
Go ahead and flip that mirror on yourself and be you in that mirror because it's you. I just don't understand how someone whose talent specifically is offensive minded, how you could be that bad. I mean, it's like saying your one thing is radio and you get on here and you like don't say anything for 28 minutes, then you curse, then you go off the air. Like, it's genuinely hard to conceive being that bad at something that is supposed to be your thing.
Right.
I just don't. I don't know.
Bears fan and you're forced to listen to their non-answers, both right. him and Ryan Pace, and you're listening to Nagy say this morning, like, oh yeah, the coaching staff, we're up in the offices and we're really dissecting each play and like what isn't working on. Nothing worked on any of the plays.
Nope.
418 yards to 47. That was the difference.
And there were 46 in sacks.
46
so you had
sacks.
One offensive yard
one
net.
Yard. We just saw the Browns play Tyrod Taylor and the Texans. And before Tyrod got hurt, he was having some success. More than 1 yard.
Matt Nagy is where quarterbacks go to die. And that is unfortunate. I'm telling you, my number one takeaway yesterday was, is Mitch Trubisky a good quarterback? And that is a scary mental place to be and not a place I wanted to be after that game.
I'm not willing to admit that.
Can we just reset and talk about tonight's game after a break? Let's do that.
Yep. Quick break. We're going to talk a little bit about Eagles and Cowboys. Maybe a parlay. Maybe something to cheer us up.
Maybe a touchdown. Will we see a touchdown this weekend?
I'd look forward to that.
A touchdown that I'd like to watch this weekend. A touchdown.
Talk about it next is The Drive.
PDR Automotive has been in business since 1973. That's 12 presidential elections. PDR can service your vehicle, whether it's powered by gasoline, diesel fuel, hybrid, or totally electric. Change is inevitable, but one thing you can always count on being consistent is PDR and their ability to service your vehicle no matter what you drive. Specializing in advanced electrical systems. Online at PDRauto.com. Remember, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481.
This is Gina from ABC Heating and Air Conditioning. If you're looking for a top-of-the-line air conditioner, think Amana. We carry all sizes and offer expert installation. ABC Heating and Air Conditioning is locally owned, and we've been in business for 50 years, and for 50 years, the only brand we've sold is Amana. So go with a company that is local, dependable, and will be there for you no matter what time of day or night. ABC, always be comfortable. Let us install your new Amana air conditioner. Visit www.abcheatingandac.com.
Drew and Jonathan Scott here to tell you that with the American Family Insurance Home Quote Tool, you can easily design a customized policy for your dream home right from the comfort of your couch.
And fun paint fact, there are over 150 shades of white, like Hello White, Fluffy Bunny, Eggshell.
They get it. Explore the AmFam Home Quote Tool at amfam.com/home to learn more about your policy coverage options. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin. Products not available in every state.
Carpet Weavers is flooring their customers. They work with the biggest brands to bring you the best selections and prices on hardwood, luxury tile, carpet, and more. Stop in at 616 West Market View Drive in Champaign and let one of their sales associates help you find the perfect flooring for your lifestyle. Their 100% satisfaction guarantee allows you to be confident in your purchase. Carpet Weavers has been flooring people with beautiful carpet and flooring since 1988. In fact, they're nationally ranked as one of the top 25 specialty flooring stores in the country. Find out more online at carpetweaversflooring.com.
Long's Garage in Urbana is the oldest auto repair facility in the area. In fact, they've been in business 80 years. That spanned 20 presidential elections. The population of Champaign-Urbana 80 years ago was around 23,000. Now it's over 210,000, and Long's is still proudly serving all of them. There aren't many places that can survive and thrive through 80 years of outstanding service, so give Long's a shot at 503 East Main Street in Urbana or online at longsautomotiverepair.com.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Switching attachments is simple, and a smooth hydrostatic transmission makes for easy operation. The Kubota BX Series, the number one selling subcompact tractor in the U.S. for over 10 years. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Berkey's, your local Kubota dealer at 2202 South High Cross Road in Urbana.
Hey, Illini fans, it's Max Kellerman. Catch Lon Tay and Derek Piper weekdays from 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Pushing on through, Trevor. Just pushing on through. It is The Drive. Derek Piper, Trevor Valise. Let out some anger. Let out some frustrations. We talked about some bad football. It's time to end on a high note. Let's get ready for Monday Night Football. Dallas Cowboys, Philadelphia Eagles tonight in Jerry World. And we're going to try to win some money.
Where do you like? Cowboys are -3.5, basically 190 on the money line. Eagles coming off that really boring loss to the Niners where it seemed like they couldn't get anything going offensively. But then at the same time I go, you know, okay, granted the Cowboys have looked good in both games, but they were also a Chris Godwin fumble out of the end zone away from losing that game by 14. And if the Chargers didn't get absolutely jobbed by the refs for no reason like six times in that game, they could have easily lost that game.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't have like a super strong lean just in terms of money line or who's going to win. Like, I'm not guaranteeing that Dallas is going to win. I understand why they're the favorite, but it also wouldn't shock me if the Eagles won.
If I had to pick, I would go with Eagles +3.5.
Okay.
Just to say it's a close game and the Eagles could win. I'd be very interested in taking an alternate line with them, like +10, and parlaying it with something in the game, or even looking next week, like Bucks on the road at the Patriots in a bounce back.
I like that.
But in terms of tonight, Jalen Hurts, his rushing yards, I know that they're progressively getting higher and higher as far as setting that number, but still at 54.5.
Yep.
And a guy that, when you take away, he didn't play that full game last year in week 16, did he, or week 17?
No, because they basically punted it, didn't they?
Right.
Against the Cowboys?
Yeah. So he had 82 yards rushing last week, 62 in week one, and then his three previous starts at the very end of the last year, 69, 63, 106.
So
he's gone over that number a lot. That's something to look at.
I like that. I don't want to touch Zeke with a 10-foot pole, and maybe it's just me, but Pollard has actually been getting more carries than him, or at least a substantial amount, and he just hasn't looked that great. I understand that he scored a touchdown last week, but I would not be putting my personal money on the line for like Zeke touchdown and Zeke over 70 yards rushing or something. That's just me. But Pollard's looked far too good, and Zeke has looked far too either injured or mediocre for me to trust that he would have a big game tonight specifically.
Yeah, I like that. As far as Pollard, like going with either his yards or maybe he gets a touchdown at some pretty nice odds.
It feels like one of these Dallas receivers, pick 'em, is going to score a touchdown. I don't know if it's Cooper or C.D. Lamb.
I always find myself leaning towards C.D. Lamb.
Okay.
But
everybody's plus money tonight to score a touchdown, so there's no one who's heavily juiced in any way. So I don't know. I always look for value on the touchdowns just because I don't really think it's much fun to pick three guys at -110 and hope that the game goes according to script, because often it feels like some part of the game doesn't.
Right.
So I don't know. I would look more so at like one of the quarterbacks because they both have good legs getting a touchdown. Or like I mentioned to you, Zach Ertz has COVID, so Goddard's the only tight end for the Eagles, and he's +260. Maybe Pollard vultures one away from Zeke.
Mm.
That's where I'm at.
Devontae Smith, too. I thought that last week he'd do better. He had a nice week one, week two. Just for the Eagles in general, couldn't score in the red zone for anything. Maybe Devontae Smith finds his way in the end zone.
I like that. I like an alternate spread on the Eagles and then maybe a sneaky Cowboys touchdown and maybe Devontae touchdown for the Eagles.
I like it.
There you go.
There you have it.